21. Martin and Philip sat in the cave, using a chunk of golden I-beam as a bench. They watched the dragons and discussed their poor decisions.
Pressuring Jeff to make the dragons better without offering to help was wrong, Martin said.
Giving him the job of creating the dragons in the first place was a bad move, Philip said. Sure, he had the expertise, but he was also the one who had to be rescued after Todd dropped them off of a cliff. He was bound to take training for self-defense too seriously.
Yeah, we should have just fought each other for practice. Just, you know, we all get together, pick teams, and fight. Like a magical version of flag football.
Say, do kids in Europe and England play flag soccer?
No. We just played what you call soccer. You don't need body armor and a trauma specialist on hand to play the full version of our game. That's why we love it.
Martin said,
I think that's also the reason Americans don't. Anyway, that's how we should have handled the self-defense training. The dragons were an unnecessary complication.
Philip nodded.
Agreed. And now that I think about it, splitting up to get rid of the dragons wasn't necessary either. We are time travelers. We could have all just swarmed the dragons in each location, then traveled back in time to the same moment at the next place where dragons had appeared. In essence, we all would have taken out all of the dragons at the same time, everywhere. No matter how comfortable we get with the idea that we can travel through time, our brains just aren't designed to work that way. It runs counter to our instincts.
The two looked off into the middle distance for a moment. Then Martin said,
Also, assuming that the dragons needed food was wrong. Sure, we'd seen them eating, but they aren't biological. There's no reason to believe that they'll eventually have to go outside to eat. Sure, they should need food, but they should also die when their heads are cut off. I guess they just eat when they're bored, and there's food handy. I've certainly been guilty of that.
Yes, you're right, of course. And creating that massive pile of hay just outside the door was folly as well. They already knew that all of the food in the world was outside. Putting another pile of food outside with it wasn't much of an added inducement. And even if it had been, the goal looks like a big blue disc, so putting it up over the cave exit was never going to make the dragons walk through. It just looked to them like we'd sealed them in with a big blue window.
Yeah. I think the key is to get them moving so fast that they can't stop before they go through the goal.
Philip screwed his face up in deep concentration. After several seconds of intense thought, he said,
They probably eat grass, not because they need it, but because sheep eat grass, and they have some sheep instincts, yes?
Martin said, Yes, we think. Philip smiled.
Okay. What else do sheep want? More to the point, what do they want badly enough to run to get it?
I don't know. What?
Philip sat a little taller, proud of the insight he was about to share.
They want to not get eaten.
You're saying that sheep will run to not get eaten?
Well, I wouldn't put it that way.
Yes, you would. You would, and you did. You put it exactly that way. What will sheep run to get not eaten?
Okay, fine, but you see what I mean?
Yes, Martin said, once I deciphered your sentence structure.
The point is, if we can trigger the sheep fear instincts in the dragons...
The point,
Martin interrupted,
is that you are an Englishman. Your people invented English. And here you are being corrected by an American, a less educated American. How will you ever face your fellow Englishmen again?
The same way we always face each other, with a hint of embarrassment.
Martin said,
Okay. So what do we do?
We put something in here with them, Something that will cause them to flee at great speed out into the tunnel, where a ghoul is waiting in the dark for them.
Philip walked out into the tunnel and put up an opaque force field to keep light out, and to keep Neith from accidentally entering the cave and walking into the ghoul, which he placed a bit further into the cave. Philip returned to the cave's main chamber. He found Martin still sitting on the I-beam, fiddling with his smartphone. Martin said,
"It's just about ready."
He placed his phone back into the silver-painted wooden box he carried it in.
"The animation's gonna be pretty rough, and the sound is just what I could find on short notice, but if the dragons have the intelligence of sheep, it should do the job. You ready?"
"Very much so," Philip said.
Martin pressed a finger to the screen of his phone. In the distance, behind the dragons, beyond the stacks of solid gold tiles, shingles, planks, and I-beams, at the very back of the chamber, opposite the entrance, a giant wolf materialized. The wolf stood 30 feet tall at the shoulder, with matted gray fur and beady gray eyes. It snarled, revealing fearsome gray teeth. Martin said,
"I didn't have time to paint it."
The wolf looked hunkered down as if ready to pounce. At first, it didn't move. After several seconds, it still hadn't moved. Philip asked,
"Is it going to move?"
"Yeah. I hoped the sight of it would freak the dragons out, but they haven't noticed it yet. I guess we'll have to get their attention."
"Yes,"
Philip agreed.
"But before we do, I want to remind you, I didn't have a lot of time."
Philip nodded impatiently.
"Yes, I understand. Just do it."
Martin poked at his smartphone again. At the far side of the chamber, the wolf's mouth opened. It didn't hinge down from the back like a real wolf's jaw would. Instead, the entire lower mandible slid straight down in one piece, like the chin of an old-fashioned ventriloquist dummy. The jaw lurched up and down in time with a loud, regular, rhythmic barking sound that seemed more appropriate to a small terrier than an immense wolf. As pathetic as the animation and sound were, they succeeded in drawing the attention of the dragons. All four of them jumped, startled from their slumber by the ridiculous barking. They turned and saw the artificial wolf. For a moment, save for the barking and the badly animated jaw movements, the world was all silence and stillness. Then, for quite some time, the opposite was true. Four full-sized dragons panicking in an enclosed space, flying at top speed in a tight, tangled mess while roaring at the top of their lungs and breathing fire at the same time, would have been quite chaotic enough on its own. Adding in tons of solid gold building materials flying in every direction, the sounds of Martin and Philip shouting in surprise and alarm, and the rhythmic barking of the fake wolf resulted in a feast for the senses, that left said senses feeling overstuffed and fearing they may soon be sick. Martin and Philip dove to the ground behind the I-beam they had earlier used as a bench. Martin hastily threw up a force field just in time to deflect a shower of glittering gold doorknobs, knocked their way accidentally by some passing dragon's tail. Philip huddled in a fetal position, with his arms covering his head and his eyes squeezed shut. He lay that way for a moment, his only information from the outside world coming in through his ears. He listened, then asked,
"Martin, is that Jingle Bells?"
"What?"
Martin shouted, trying to be heard over the roaring and the crackling of fire and the crash of precious metal being thrown against the walls. Philip crawled closer to Martin and, as loud as he could, asked,
"Is that wolf singing Jingle Bells?"
Martin smiled and shouted,
"Yes! I thought you'd find it amusing."
"I might,"
Philip admitted,
"if I weren't terrified."
"Yeah, timing is everything."
Martin and Philip carefully peered over the edge of the I-beam. The force field would protect them from flying gold and from the dragon's fire, but the dragons themselves would sail right through it. Besides, just like some movies are scary enough that they're best viewed through a protective screen of fingers, the sight Martin and Philip were witnessing was best viewed while peeking out from behind something heavy. One of the dragons started at the far end of the cavern and flew directly at the wolf in as menacing a manner as it could muster, blowing a huge ball of fire before it. As large as the cave was, the dragon could only get in 3 good flaps before it came very close to the wolf and lost all of its nerve. The dragon turned, swooping away, putting as much distance as it could between itself and the wolf without actually leaving the chamber. The dragon stopped short of striking the wall. Its wing clipped a shelf, sending several thousand solid gold plumbing elbows flying. The dragon turned away from the wall, looked at its surroundings, saw the wolf at the far end of the cavern, and decided to attack, starting the whole cycle over again. All this happened while the 3 other dragons went through the exact same series of steps at their own differing paces from different angles, while the wolf stood motionless and barked to the tune of jingle bells. Philip said,
"I thought they'd want to escape."
"I think they do,"
Martin said, straining to be heard.
"What?"
Philip said, straining to hear.
"I said I think they do want to escape."
"Then why don't they? The tunnel out is right there,"
Martin said.
"I think it's like a fish trap. Fish swim in through a hole, find themselves in an enclosed space, freak out, and can't find the hole to swim out again. Fish aren't very smart."
"So how do we stop this?"
"Show them the exit."
Martin activated the voice amplification spell, flew over to hover next to the tunnel opening, motioned toward it like a magician, displaying the spot where his assistant had just been, and said,
"Ahem!"
All 4 dragons took notice, altered their course, and within seconds had settled into a new cycle of attacking the wolf, then flying across the cavern to breathe fire at Martin before repeating the process again.